گاهی موقع ها آلودگی ها تو ما رسوب میکنه خود، چون نشون نمیده، چون تو روزای عادی و معمولی.
Sometimes we are so much drowned into the scenes that we are incapable of witnessing our faults and shortcomings. The main reason is because we have an ordinary life without any test or tribulation. If we are tested properly, then we could see how the dirt and pollution of our souls are crystal clear.
البته اون کسی که خوب دقت تو خودش بکنه میتونه بفهمه، همون روزای عادی هم میتونه بفهمه که حسوده.
Of course, there are some people who can see the impurities of their souls and minds, and they take care of their deeds. For instance, they can recognize that they are arrogant, jealous, angry, or greedy. However, if we are drowned so much into this world, we can't easily discern our negative traits, and day after day, we become darker in our souls. Therefore, we must be careful about our deeds and do not let our sins to darken our souls and minds. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
In the limelight. Fossil fuel companies have access to an obscure legal tool that could jeopardize worldwide efforts to protect the climate, and they are starting to use it. The result could cost countries that press ahead with those efforts billions of dollars. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Rachel Trasher, writer. This article is published under the heading Treaties Protecting Fossil Fuel Investors Threaten Global Efforts to Save the Climate and Could Cost Countries Billions. Stay tuned for more. Fossil fuel companies have access to an obscure legal tool that could jeopardize worldwide efforts to protect the climate, and they are starting to use it. The result could cost countries that press ahead with those efforts billions of dollars. Over the past 50 years, countries have signed thousands of treaties that protect foreign investors from government actions. These treaties are like contracts between national governments meant to entice investors to bringing projects with the promise of local jobs and access to new technologies. But now, as countries try to phase out fossil fuels to slow climate change, These agreements could leave the public facing overwhelming legal and financial risks. The treaties allow investors to sue governments for compensation in a process called Investor-State Dispute Settlement, or ISDS. In short, investors could use ISDS clauses to demand compensation in response to government actions to limit fossil fuels, such as cancelling pipelines and denying drilling permits. For example, TC Energy, a Canadian company, is currently seeking more than $15 billion over U.S. President Joe Biden's cancellation of the Keystone XL pipeline. In a study published on May 5th, 2022, in the journal Science, we estimate that countries would face up to $340 billion in legal and financial risks for cancelling fossil fuel projects that are subjected to treaties with ISDS clauses. That's more than countries worldwide put into climate adaptation and mitigation measures combined in fiscal year 2019. And it doesn't include the risks of phasing out coal investments or cancelling fossil fuel infrastructure projects like pipelines and liquefied natural gas terminals. It means that money countries might otherwise spend to build a low-carbon future could instead go to the very industries that have knowingly been fueling climate change, severely jeopardizing countries' capacity to propel the green energy transition forward. Of the world's 55,206 upstream oil and gas projects that are in the early stages of development, there are 10,506 projects identified, 19% of the total, that were protected by 334 treaties providing access to ISDS. That number could be much higher. We could only identify the headquarters of project owners, not the overall corporate structures of the investments due to limited data. We also know that law firms are advertising clients in industry to structure investments to ensure access to ISDS through processes such as using subsidiaries in countries with treaty protections. Depending upon future oil and gas prices, scientists have found that the total net present value of those projects is expected to reach $60 billion to $234 billion. If countries cancel these protected projects, foreign investors could sue for financial compensation in line with these valuations. Doing so would put several low- and middle-income countries at severe risk. Mozambique and Guyana could each face over $20 billion in potential losses from ISDS claims. If countries also cancel oil and gas projects that are further along in development but are not yet producing, they face more risk. Experts have found that 12% of those projects worldwide are protected by investment treaties, and their investors could sue for $32 billion to $106 billion. Cancelling approved projects could prove exceptionally risky for countries like Kazakhstan, which could lose $6 billion to $18 billion, and Indonesia, with $3 billion to $4 billion at risk. Cancelling coal investments for fossil fuel infrastructural projects like pipelines and liquefied natural gas terminals could lead to even more claims. There have been at least 231 ISDS cases involving fossil fuels so far. Just the threat of massive payments to investors could cause many countries to delay climate mitigation policies, causing so-called regulatory chill. Both Denmark and New Zealand, for example, seem to have designed their fossil fuel phase-out plans specifically to minimize their exposure to ISDS. Some climate policy experts have suggested that Denmark may have chosen 2050 as the end of date for oil and gas extraction to avoid disputes with existing exploration license holders. New Zealand banned all new offshore oil exploration in 2018, but did not cancel any existing contracts. The climate minister acknowledged that a more aggressive plan would have run afoul of investor state settlements. France revised a draft law banning fossil fuel extraction by 2040 and allowing the renewal of oil exploitation permits after the Canadian company Vermilion threatened to launch an ISDS case. While these findings are alarming, countries have options to avoid onerous legal and financial risks. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development is currently discussing proposals on the future of investment treaties. A straightforward approach would be for countries to terminate or withdraw from these treaties. Some officials have expressed concern about unforeseen impacts of unilaterally terminating investment treaties, but other countries have already done so with few or no real economic consequences. For more complex trade agreements, countries can negotiate to remove ISDS provisions, as the United States and Canada did when they replaced the North American Free Trade Agreement with the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. Additional challenges stem from sunset clauses that bind countries for a decade or more after they have withdrawn from some treaties. Such is the case for Italy, which withdrew from the Energy Charter Treaty in 2016. It is currently stuck in an ongoing ISDS case initiated by UK company Rockhopper over a ban on coastal oil drilling. The Energy Charter Treaty, a special investment agreement covering the energy sector, emerged as the greatest single contributor to global ISDS risks in data set. Many European countries are currently considering whether to leave the treaty and how to avoid the same fate as Italy. If all country parties to a treaty can agree together to withdraw, they could collectively sidestep the sunset clause through mutual agreement. Combating climate change is not cheap. Actions by governments and the private sector are both needed to slow global warming and keep it from fueling increasingly devastating disasters. In the end, the question is who will pay and be paid in the global energy transition. We believe that, at the very least, it would be counterproductive to divert critical public finance from essential mitigation and adaptation efforts to the pockets of fossil fuel industry investors whose products caused the problem in the first place.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
on the news line.
On May 10, 2021, Israel began an offensive on the Gaza Strip that went on for 11 days. The regime razed several buildings in the meantime, including a tower housing the bureaus of several news outlets, including Al Jazeera's. The bombings killed over 250 Palestinians in the besieged enclave, including dozens of women and children. But this time, unlike other incidents where Israel launched attacks on the Strip, Palestinian resistance movements struck back hard, killing at least 12 Israelis.
We have to remember that while there have been deaths on both sides, the deaths of Palestinians far outnumber those of the Israelis, probably by close to 1,000 to 1. So there is not a lot of importance given to Palestinian lives. This has been an ongoing, long-standing policy of the world. It's completely unjust. It ignores international law and human rights, but this has been the case. But any efforts to bring rights to the Palestinians, rights that they are entitled to by international law simply because they live, because they exist, will be opposed because no other country wants to risk its economic ties with Israel.
The conflict had been in the making for several weeks prior, when Israeli troops intensified their crackdown on Palestinians in the occupied Al-Quds during the holy Muslim month of Ramadan. The protests that had erupted at the regime's attempt to evict several families from the East Al-Quds neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah also escalated tensions. The devastating conflict ended in an Egypt-brokered ceasefire that went into effect on May 21st. The battle, however, significantly altered the perceptions about the military capabilities of Israel and Gaza-based resistance groups. The 2021 confrontation is widely hailed as a victory for Hamas and other resistance movements in Gaza, not only militarily and on the ground, but also morally on an international level. Demonstrations in solidarity with the Palestinians in Gaza and the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood were held across the world. A wider and more diverse group of people around the globe called for an end to the conflict and Israel's aggression, which helped raise awareness about the plight of Palestinians to a much higher extent.
Israeli invisibility can mean a number of things. You're referring to militarily, but there's also the invincibility that it had for so many years as being seen as the victim, the innocent victim just trying to defend itself. That has certainly been shattered. People around the world, even if they support Israel, see Israel as the aggressor.
A year on, Tel Aviv is once again intensifying the pressure on the Palestinians. Israeli forces and settlers have repeatedly raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound over the past few weeks, a location that's considered Islam's third holiest site. In response, there has been a spike in the number of deadly Palestinian retaliatory operations across the occupied territories. Palestinians say the attacks are a natural response to Israel's desecration of Al-Aqsa, an issue they warn is their red line. The mounting tensions between Palestinians and Israelis are raising fears about another confrontation. But the events over the past couple of years have indicated that Palestinians will continue to fight for what they believe in and that they can inflict pain on the other side, too.
Europe's largest economy, Germany, is going through a historic phase. Inflation rates have risen sharply, reaching a 40-year high, with soaring energy prices being the key driving force. According to the German Federal Statistics Agency, the Statist, consumer prices were about 7.5% higher in April compared to last year. Berlin also faces an imminent recession in case of a gas supply cut from Russia. The latest remarks by the chief executive officer of a major commercial bank in Germany have increased concerns inside the country. Manfred Knopf has warned that the energy supply in Germany is at risk, which may lead to the spread of bankruptcies in the country. Quoted by a German business newspaper, Knopf said the energy supply is at risk. Supply chains are breaking in addition to high inflation in the country. He also warned that bankruptcies in German markets are probably going to increase. According to the executive, almost a third of Germany's foreign trade has been impacted as well. Germany is facing soaring energy prices and a skyrocketing inflation due to the imposition of sanctions on Russia to pressure Moscow into ending the war in Ukraine. The measures mainly affected the financial sector and the supply of high-tech products. The real crisis in Germany lies in the Russian gas, on which it depends to a large extent. Berlin was one of the opponents within the EU to ban the import of Russian gas, but the scenario changed completely after it announced recently its readiness to accept an immediate ban on Russian oil and gas supplies. According to Forbes, Germany is one of the largest customers of Russian oil, and Berlin depends on a third of its Russian oil imports, 45% of its coal purchases, and 55% of its gas imports from Russia. Economists believe the immediate suspension of Russian energy imports would cause a severe recession in Germany.
The EU is not allowed to stop. This is what Washington ordered, and Washington orders the EU around. And the crazy situation right now is that Washington was never as powerful as it is today. This is especially funny since the American president is a weak president. So obviously somebody else is inserting this pressure into the EU from Washington, and I think that is the American deep state pushing Joe Biden and the EU, both of them. And as long as nobody stops this kind of power wielding, it will continue.
The Russia-Ukraine war is not comparable to any other war in history due to its geoeconomic significance. Both Ukraine and Russia are leading exporters of commodities such as crude, natural gas, iron and steel, wheat and edible oils that have a direct impact on inflation levels in major world economies. The conflict pushed crude prices to over $130 per barrel. There were also price increases on wheat, edible oils, and other commodities. The unilateral sanctions of the West against Russia had the unintended consequence of exacerbated inflation in Europe, East Africa, and South Asia, which were the largest importers of Russian wheat and energy. Despite the detrimental effect of sanctions on global markets, the EU unveiled plans for a Russian oil embargo earlier this week. The measure is expected to come into force within 9 months, with the time frame varying for different petroleum products. But several EU nations, including Hungary, Slovakia, and the Czech Republic, are seeking an exemption from the ban.
And of course, all these sanctions against Russia are completely unfair, unjustified, and for the first time, because we have 8th of May today, and for the first time since the Second World War, a German government is again siding with Nazis and again against Russia. And this really makes Moscow very angry, and the people too.
The founder of Brazil's Workers' Party, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who served as president for 2 terms from 2003 to 2011, has launched his presidential bid as Brazil's October 2022 presidential elections approach. Economic recovery is his campaign's main promise.
We need to put Brazil back among the best economies in the world.
In an address to his supporters in the city of Sao Paulo, Lula called for unity around democracy. He also stressed the importance of focusing on Brazil's sovereignty and environmental issues. He criticized the performance of incumbent president Jair Bolsonaro, calling his administration incompetent. Bolsonaro faces a tough challenge to win re-election against his political nemesis Lula. The latest polls indicate that Lula maintains a comfortable lead over Bolsonaro. Many Brazilians are angry at the president's handling of the coronavirus pandemic, rising inflation, and high fuel prices. Bolsonaro has been widely criticized for downplaying the coronavirus pandemic from the outset, opposing restrictive measures for fear of damaging the economy. Over 650,000 Brazilians have died of COVID-19. Lula had previously described the huge COVID-19 death toll under Bolsonaro's watch as genocide. In addition, the government's fiscal indiscipline and the prospect of double-digit inflation have prompted the central bank to increase interest rates by 5.75 percentage points since March. Now, Lula says if elected, he has grand plans for Brazil's economy. One of them is to free the country of the US dollar. Lula da Silva has proposed expanding Latin American economic integration through the creation of a common regional currency. Lula says Latin American countries should use a unified regional currency like the euro to end South America's inclination toward the US dollar and to do bilateral trade with each other instead of having to exchange for US dollars. Lula has also vowed to revive the BRICS system, integrating Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa in an independent economic architecture to challenge Western financial hegemony. The five countries represent 41% of the global population, 24% of the global gross domestic product, and 16% of the global trade. Lula da Silva has also vowed to bolster Brazil's relations with other regional countries.
Now that's important because still the US dollar is used for the vast majority of trade in Latin America, and internationally still about 70% of international transactions are done with the dollar. What that does is it strengthens the US economy and it weakens other currencies. So Lula da Silva is saying, why are we continuing to do trade with each other using the US government currency? Why don't we create our own currency to do trade with each other? And I think a lot of countries in the region think that's a very sensible policy.
The Bretton Woods Agreement was negotiated in July 1944 by delegates from 44 countries at the United Nations Monetary and Financial Conference held in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire. Under the Bretton Woods system, gold was the basis for the US dollar and other currencies were pegged to the US dollar's value. Since then, the US dollar has dominated global trade and financial market. But now Washington faces a tough challenge, and that's to keep the crown on US dollar's head as the leading global reserve or fiat currency. For many years, the dollar has been the standard currency used in world trade. The US dollar currently has enormous power to infect the global economy with US inflation and the impact of US interest rate rises, both of which are managed primarily for US domestic purposes. Add to it the economic sanctions the US has imposed against other countries to achieve ends that complement or replace military efforts. Venezuela and Cuba are among the Latin American countries that have been victims of the US sanctions regime. One of the consequences of sanctions is rising inflation levels. Hence, it's natural for these economies to seek ways to circumvent America's sanctions. For instance, since 2011, China gradually shifted from trading in US dollars in favor of trade in yuan. It made agreements with Australia, Russia, Japan, Brazil, and Iran to trade in national currencies. It has been reported that in the first quarter of 2020, the share of the dollar in the bilateral trade between China and Russia fell below 50% for the first time.
It's an objective fact that the dollar is becoming less powerful over time. Even the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, which is dominated by the United States, has acknowledged that the use of dollars in international central bank reserves has been decreasing. Now, it's decreasing slowly. It's not going to disappear overnight. But in decades, I think it's quite clear that the hegemony that we've seen of the US dollar dominating the international financial system is over.
Most economies are establishing different mechanisms to circumvent the US sanctions regime and the hegemony of the US dollar. These range from using barter trade to trading in their currencies over the dollar. The world is moving toward multipolarity, and the US is no longer the world's largest trading nation, it's China. Therefore, it's only a matter of time before the US dollar loses its dominance among global currencies.
At least 3 Israelis were killed and several others injured in the city of Elat on Thursday in an operation the Palestinian resistance groups hailed as a victory for the residents of the occupied Al-Quds. The incident took place on the day of Nakba, or the Day of Catastrophe, marking the anniversary of Israel's eviction of Palestinians from their homeland and declaring its existence.
It was the event when 3/5, 40% of the Palestinian population was expelled or killed or expelled from their homeland, Palestine, and expelled mostly going abroad to neighboring countries and even distant countries.
The operation took place after over 600 Israeli settlers raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound under protection from the regime's forces. Over a dozen Palestinians were injured, and some 50 others, including the elderly and children, were arrested during raid. In a statement, Palestinian resistance movement Hamas stressed that the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds is a red line and that the Elat operation reflects the Palestinian nation's wrath over repeated Israeli desecrations of their holy sites. The Islamic Jihad resistance movement termed the desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque by Israeli forces and extremist Jewish settlers a declaration of war against the entire Palestinian nation, stating that Palestinians will continue to confront the occupiers and their aggression. The Muslim holy month of Ramadan has practically turned into a period of escalating tensions between Israelis and Palestinians. Israeli forces raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque culminated in an 11-day war between the regime and Gaza-based resistance groups in May last year, a conflict that killed over 260 Palestinians, including scores of women and children. There has also been a recent surge in the number of Palestinian operations across the occupied territories over the past few weeks, raising fears that another war might be on the cards. The reactions to the mounting tensions have been particularly interesting. While many Western nations have kept silent about the developments, some, including US President Joe Biden, have been calling on both sides to avoid violence and exercise restraint. A parallel can be drawn with the war in Ukraine. Is anyone calling on Ukrainian troops to lay down their arms?
In a way, it's the same thing that is causing the United States to back the Ukrainians and to be against the Palestinians. It's the United States sees an advantage and in putting pressure on a potential rival to its power, in this case Russia. They decided that Israel is the power that could help them to achieve that dominance. So it's all about in effect the United States ruling the world.
The normalization of ties between some Arab states and Israel has made matters even worse for the people of Palestine, despite earlier promises that the establishment of relations would benefit their cause. The Palestinians have vowed to continue their resistance until their legitimate rights are acknowledged. If the developments over the past several decades are any indication, they will make good on their words.
In the limelight.
20 years later, none of those responsible for the CIA's heinous regime of torture were ever prosecuted, lamented Representative Ilhan Omar, adding, instead they got promotions. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading, The Classified Docs Show CIA Used Prisoner as a Torture Training Prop. Stay tuned for more. A prisoner at a Central Intelligence Agency black site in Afghanistan was used as a training prop to teach U.S. operatives how to torture other prisoners, leaving him with serious brain damage and other ailments, newly declassified documents published recently affirm. Ammar al-Baluchi, a 44-year-old Kuwaiti national, is currently imprisoned at the U.S. prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where he is one of five men awaiting trial by military commission for alleged involvement in plotting the September 11-01 attacks on the United States. The case, which has been delayed due to disputes over the admissibility of defendant testimony extracted through torture, has been in pretrial hearings for more than a decade. A subject of the U.S. government's extraordinary rendition program, al-Baluchi was captured in Pakistan in 2003 and then transferred to secret CIA prison known both as Cobalt and the Salt Pit north of Kabul, Afghanistan. The so-called black site gained international attention after revelations that prisoner Gul Rahman was tortured to death there in 2002, and that instead of being punished, the CIA officer in charge of the site was subsequently promoted. 20 years later, none of those responsible for the CIA's heinous regime of torture were ever prosecuted. U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar tweeted recently in response to a Guardian report on al-Baluchi's experience, adding, "Instead, they got promotions." According to a declassified 2008 report by the CIA Inspector General's office, agency officials knew that al-Baluchi no longer posed a terror threat, but rendered him to the salt pit, where he was subjected to techniques that were approved under the George W. Bush administration's enhanced interrogation regimen, as well as unauthorized torture. Not only was al-Baluchi was subjected to the authorized torture of walling, in which naked prisoners were slammed against plywood and, in departures from the approved method, concrete walls, he was also used a training prop to teach trainee interrogators how to perform the technique. According to the declassified report, all the interrogation students lined up to wall Ammar so that the instructor could certify them on their ability to use the technique. The torture training sessions typically did not last for more than 2 hours at a time, the document states. They smashed my head against the wall repeatedly. It continued until I lost count at each session, al-Baluchi recounted, adding, "As my head was being hit each time, I would see sparks of lights in my eyes, as the intensity of the sparks were increasing as a result of repeated hitting. All of a sudden, I felt a strong jolt of electricity in my head. Then I couldn't see anything and everything went dark and I passed out. Previously, declassified documents state that James Mitchell, who along with his associate John Bruce Jessen, was paid $81 million by the CIA to oversee the torture and interrogation of prisoners in the so-called War on Terror, told one of al-Baluchi's lawyers that it looks like they use your client as a training prop. In 2018, al-Baluchi underwent an MRI examination which found abnormalities indicating moderate to severe brain damage, which were consistent with traumatic brain injury. According to a neuropsychologist evaluation, al-Baluchi also suffers from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder. The Inspector General's report notes that al-Baluchi's torture did not produce any useful intelligence and that he fabricated the information he provided in an effort to end his torment. The document also paints al-Baluchi in a sympathetic light, referring to him as one of the more cooperative, likable, even gentle detainees, and as one of the more intelligent or bookish prisoners. Some interrogators expressed remorse for their actions, with one saying there is no horror in it and another stating that he wished he had never been asked to participate in torture. Al-Baluchi was subsequently transferred to numerous other black sites, including one in Vilnius, Lithuania, where he was tortured by the notorious CIA operative known as the Preacher due to his penchant for infusing interrogation sessions with religious fervor. In 2006, al-Baluchi was transferred to Guantanamo. The Inspector General's reporting concludes that the CIA's rationale for detaining al-Baluchi was fuzzy and circular. We now know that the CIA's brutalization of Ammar at the black sites was secretly condemned by the agency itself. Alka Pradhan, one of al-Baluchi's military commission attorneys, told Forever War's Spencer Ackerman, adding, "But it didn't stop the U.S. government from holding him in a CIA facility at Guantanamo and trying to execute him using evidence derived from that very same treatment." Recently, the New York Times reported that U.S. military prosecutors are engaged in talks with lawyers for five Guantanamo defendants, including al-Baluchi and his uncle, alleged 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, to possibly negotiate plea deals that will spare the men from execution but result in their lifetime imprisonment. The issue of torture has proved an impediment to the prosecution of terrorism suspects and may at least partially explain prosecutors' newfound willingness to negotiate plea agreements. Last November, 7 out of 8 members of a military jury convened to hear the case against Guantanamo detainee Majid Khan recommended clemency after the defendant testified how he endured torture, including rape, being hung from a ceiling beam, and being subjected to the interrupted drowning method known as waterboarding. The jurors called Khan's treatment an affront to the concept of justice and a stain on the moral fiber of America. Numerous Guantanamo prosecutors have also resigned their post in protest, with former lead prosecutor Colonel Maurice Davis condemning what he called rigged military commissions designed to ensure that every defendant is convicted. Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
Stopping by and listening to street musicians usually changes our mood for the rest of the day. The experience would be different if one lies under the instrument while it's played, and that's what a pianist in America has done. Colin Huggins, a busker, wheels his grand piano more than half a mile from a mini storage to New York's Washington Square Park. He lets people lie down under the instrument and feel the vibrations from the keys in their bodies. Colin says he wants to help people recover emotionally from the intense disconnect they had faced during COVID-19 lockdowns.
I've always wanted to accommodate feelings in the best way possible, and I wanted to do it with music, and this is the best way I figure out how to do it. Maybe someday I'll figure out a way to do it even better, and I won't need to push this piano here. But as of now, this is the best I've got.
New York was one of the hardest hit cities by COVID-19 in the U.S. Like other places, the major city imposed lockdowns and tough curbs to contain the disease. Despite that, Colin continued playing on the streets, frequently to an audience of zero. He says he strongly believes that everything will be all right. Scaling Mount Everest is only a dream for many and a once-in-a-lifetime achievement for most professional mountaineers. Well, not for this Nepali Sherpa, who has now repeated the feat for a record 26th time. 52-year-old Kami Rita led a group of other Sherpa climbers along the traditional Southeast Ridge route to the world's tallest peak. In the process, he beat his own previous record set last year. Rita first scaled Everest in 1994 and has been making the trip nearly every year since then. The Sherpa community is an ethnic group indigenous to the Himalayan region. They are expert mountain navigators who also carry heavy loads. Everest stands nearly 9,000 meters above sea level. The mountain has been climbed more than 10,000 times since it was first scaled in 1953. The bad news is more than 300 people have died trying. Chinese scientists are establishing a meteorological monitoring station at an altitude of 8,800 meters on Mount Komolangma, the world's highest peak on the China-Nepal border. The 13 members of the research team started the trek towards an 8,300-meter base camp on Mount Komolangma from a 7,028-meter camp on Tuesday morning. They reached the camp in the afternoon and went on the last section of the arduous journey up on Wednesday morning. It replaces the one at an altitude of 8,430 meters set up by the British and U.S. scientists on the mountains in 2019. While some drivers are obsessed with the speed, some others have a passion for the look of their cars. In Tehran, car tuning lovers have assembled for the biggest show of modified vehicles. Yusuf Jalali has the story.
Fast and furious. It's the biggest show of personal cars turned SUVs. Held in Tehran's Island Karting Track, the event brought together more than 500 motorists to flaunt their modified cars.
This is the only place where car tuning lovers can vent their energy and show off their beautiful cars. When I saw the call for such a big assembly of modified vehicles, I didn't waste a moment and decided to bring my car here.
exhausts sound deeper, with flames popping out. Sound systems rattle the car roofs. And regular doors are replaced by butterfly doors, opening upward. To these people, car tuning is more than a hobby, but a passion. Majid says he has spent double the price of this Peugeot 206 to turn it into a green beast.
For us, our cars mean everything. To me, it's love. I save whatever I earn to spend on my car. So I urge the police to respect this love and stop fining us when we roll with our cars on the streets.
Based on Iran's traffic regulations, drivers are not allowed to alter the original design of their cars. Installing loudspeakers and noisy exhaust systems, and even attaching stickers, are associated with fines. Omid says he can't take this. He has transformed his Iranian-made car, dubbed Rana, into a whole new model, saying it looks better now on the street.
I spent whatever I could afford to make the streets look better with our cars, but the police are treating us like we are wrongdoers. I myself oppose dangerous driving in the city. What I want is just to make my car look more attractive.
Car tuning encompasses any modification to a vehicle that would lead to a higher engine performance and dynamic handling of the car. As long as these people stick to these rules, police will not have issues. Otherwise, they must keep these beauties inside their parking lots.
Thank you. However eye-catching they are, these mutated cars are no longer road pets and are good for drifting on tracks like this. Organizers say that's exactly why they held this show, to provide a chance for car-tuning maniacs to vent their energy in a safe place. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The third long-duration team of astronauts launched by SpaceX to the International Space Station ISS for NASA safely departed the orbiting outpost to begin their descent back to Earth, capping a six-month science mission. Live video showing the capsule drifting away from the station as the two vehicles soared high over Australia was shown on a NASA webcast. Wearing helmeted white and black spacesuits, the four astronauts were seen strapped into the crew cabin shortly before the spacecraft separated from the station, orbiting some 400 kilometers above the Earth. NASA said one of the cosmonauts, Oleg Artemyev, assumed command of the ISS from Marshburn in a handover before Thursday's undocking.
And I relinquish control of the or command of the space station to you.
I accept command. I accept command. Thank you for key. Thank you for friendship. It was unbelievable time to get.
If all goes smoothly, the Crew Dragon craft dubbed Endurance will parachute into the sea off the coast of Florida on Friday. Their departure came about a week after they welcomed their replacement team aboard the station, also currently home to three Russian cosmonauts on a long-term mission. Chinese scientists are establishing a meteorological monitoring station at an altitude of 8,800 meters on Mount Komolangma, the world's highest peak on the China-Nepal border. The 13 members of the research team started the trek towards an 8,300-meter base camp on Mount Komolangma from a 7,028-meter camp on Tuesday morning. They reached the camp in the afternoon and went on the last section of the arduous journey up on Wednesday morning. If the station is established successfully, it will replace the one at an altitude of 8,430 meters set up by the British and U.S. scientists on the mountains in 2019. It will be the world's highest of its kind, according to the Chinese Academy of Sciences. Iran's capital, Tehran, is hosting the country's most high-profile robotics event, dubbed RoboCop Iran Open. The event seeks to promote robotics and artificial intelligence by holding tournaments. Yusuf Shalali has the story.
They may not be able to face human soccer players just yet, but these robot footballers are taking their baby steps toward achieving this goal. The 16th edition of RoboCop Iran Open brought together 100 teams from across the country to compete in different fields of robotics and artificial intelligence, with a focus on soccer robots.
Our robot is a soccer player that moves with its wheels. It's totally different from humanoid robots, but it can certainly challenge them and beat them in a football match.
We have taken part in the Maze League of the RoboCop games. It's the first time I am involved in this big competition, where I have to implement all my programming, mechanics and electronics skills to win the game. I am so excited.
Organizers say RoboCop seeks to promote robotics and artificial intelligence by offering IT experts a real-time challenge to build the most capable robots.
The idea of RoboCop competitions is to increase the creativity of IT experts in developing efficient robots. Why soccer? Because first of all, it is a highly popular sport, and second, it is a highly strategic game that requires a robot to perform many difficult tasks, which, if accomplished, can turn them into strong and capable robots.
RoboCop Iran Open is part of the international initiative dubbed Robot Soccer World Cup, or shortly, RoboCop. The event was first launched in 1997 and was inspired by the victory of a computer chess player against the then world chess champion, Garry Kasparov. The official goal of the competition, as stated by its organizers, is to hone the capabilities of humanoid robot soccer players so that they will win a soccer game against the winner of the most recent FIFA World Cup in mid-21st century.
While robots still have a long way to go before they can challenge the likes of Messi and Ronaldo, the ultimate goal of RoboCop is not about robot footballers beating human rivals, but the technology advances that can be made along the way to improve our lives. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
There is a lot to be worried about when it comes to the climate. An Indian auto rickshaw driver in the capital, New Delhi, has come up with an innovative idea to beat the scorching heat wave. He has built a garden on the roof of his vehicle to keep passengers cool. Mahendra Kumar's vehicle, dubbed Moving Garden, stands out among others with its unique rooftop. He has grown vegetables, flowers and a variety of herbs and shrubs on the small roof space. Kumar says it was easy to make the garden by spreading a thick sack over a mat and covering it with soil. Then he added the plants, watered them and watched them grow.
Around 2 years ago, I had this idea during the peak of the summer season. I thought if I can grow some plants on the roof, it will keep my auto rickshaw cool and give relief from the heat to my passengers.
Kuma says the thick green keeps his three-wheeler cool even when temperatures reach 45 degrees Celsius. The rickshaw driver has also installed small fans inside for the comfort of passengers as an extra measure. His passengers say they feel cool because of the natural air conditioner. Kumar's rickshaw attracts many commuters for obvious reasons, and passers-by also stop to take selfies.
IRIB English Radio.